Thank you, Howard. As you notice, there's a key difference between most of us here today that are living in countries that are in peace and the chairman introducing an immediate business war element, because we are competitors, the Kiwis and ourselves. And in business, for all the differences it has, the fundamental difference is that when we do wargaming, it is like the Western Approaches wargame that was played yesterday. We are at war, and people that lose in battle will lose shelf space, where we, our territory is the shelf space in the retailer or the shelf space in the consumer mind, because your brand loses favor over somebody else's brand. So the difference is we are permanent at war, and we need to train our teams to be better in those wars. And for this, we applied wargaming more and more extensively, and I take you through how we do so, with the focus on the how-to element, which is much more important to you than the why, and I don't want to share too much with my Kiwi chairman. So when do we play? There are different occasions. I take out the two most common ones. Either we want to enter a market in which we are hardly present today but want to gain a market share, or the competitor has found one of our markets in which we have, as we call it, a profit pool, and they believe they can have some of the profit pie in that particular market. In the first case, it is a proactive approach. We have a business plan. We'd like to have it stress tested, for which we apply the war game. In the other case, we have a business in place and we are being challenged. In the one case, the timing is with us because we have the dynamics of our own business case. In the other case, we are being challenged and we have to plan to be most effective with the timing we choose for our war game to fight the invasion of our market and preferably stop it at the beach or even in the water. In both cases, the outcome is a stress-tested course of action in our business. And, which is almost as important, in the play we discover early warning indicators. And those early warning indicators tell us what will be the most likely course of action we can anticipate from our competition. We set targets before we start, just as in the Western approaches, apparently there must have been targets for how many U-boats to be sunk per week. We have targets as well. And one among the most important targets are team-oriented targets. And then we come probably to your dialectic play. You want a team that works. You want a team that trusts each other, because a trusted team with a high morale is more effective in battle. So we aim as an explicit, say, objective in our war games for a shared confidence in each other, a common language. What do we mean when we mean, say, the particular product that this competitor is launching? You want shared insights, but you don't want myths. You want a very clear image of that common enemy. And I can't stress sufficiently the importance of top quality intelligence preceding doing a war game, because there's nothing worse than starting with flawed intelligence and then subsequently preparing for an attack that never comes, or for an attack that comes in a place where you didn't expect it. And you want to build stronger intra-company connections. Now, compared to most militaries, our company with only 24,000 staff worldwide is small, but it still has its communication issues, as you can imagine. So you want people in different disciplines, be it marketing, be it sales, be it supply chain, also know each other, because people knowing each other are more effective in battle. We also want to study capabilities, our own and those of the competition, and we want to understand and obviously challenge the adversary. We want to anticipate the adversary and understand things like sensitivities. Where is the sensitivity when we invest a particular amount of resources in defending a particular, say, shelf or country or product market combination? Where exactly are the sensitivities? And the outcomes, of course, are business-like. They are smart. That means they have to be concrete. Just as, say, sinking a number of U-boats per week, we want to have a particular market share, and that ultimately translates to whether we can justify doing this game or not. So how do we play? I added here a very simple setup. As you see, this is a one round game in your terms. But the difference between the games most of you know and the game we play is that everybody that is in the game starts playing red. They've been prepared with a very intense, yet hopefully understandable, intel package on red. So they know red, and the only thing that really has to be delivered in, say, the war game first half is the position red will take in the upcoming battle, which is where will they spend their resources, on what particular lines of business, and how will they do it. So it's their capabilities. We know their factories, we know the range of products they produce, but also, most of all, trying through playing red to define their intent. Who is this competitor? What are they really after? Which is a very different thing from capabilities. Capabilities, if you've got proper intel within, obviously, ethical and compliance boundaries, as we have to be very strict on, if you've got clear intel, you have those capabilities. But you don't, or you hardly ever have, the real intent. What is behind this move? When will they consider it a success? And the best way to discover the intent is to pretend you've just been recruited by that competitor and are preparing their business plan for the next 6-8 quarters. Because once you have their assets and you try to understand what their owners aim to achieve, that's the moment you really live up to their intent. Because you create that intent, and that's basically machiavellistic way of leveraging the bias of vividness. The more intense you experience it, which is what gaming is about, the better you get the insight. And then it's not an intel officer like myself sharing an insight that you have gained and then trying to have somebody else act upon your insight, but it's using a game, if not abusing a game, to create those insights within those executive heads by only giving them the facts. And then having the tool of wargaming as a way to experience those facts. And through that experience, they create the insights that they probably will, that will lead to their better decision making, which as an intel officer you can't do because you don't have the authority, which is very, very smart. I'm not a manager, I'm an analyst. But you want them to come to those conclusions, and the tool is a very, very suitable way. So the first round is the red game, the red team. After the break, and then everybody has had that red cap, and they all have to throw it away at the same moment to really feel, yes, we're blue again. After the break, they're going to stress test the own team. Now that they've vividly experienced who is this particular competitor, we're probably more open to say, what can we do better? Either when we have this proactive attack on somebody else's market, or when we have the reactive approach that we have to defend and basically make sure there's a sufficiently deep moat around our castle for them to break into. So what have we learned? There's a bunch of antecedent success factors. If you do this in a business setting, we've learned that a very strong project leader is critical, just as is a strong commitment by the principal. If the principal in advance is a know-it-all type, then they may accept the fact that there's a war game, but almost by default, the war game should deliver what they had already found out themselves and want their team to do. That is not the way a war game should be used. So if you have a principal that is open to say, there's so many brains in my team, I would like that team to generate the insights for, say, both what this competitor is really after and subsequently to stress test their own plans and where needed, say, open up them for recommendations to management for adaption. If that passion is not there, you may reconsider when you want a war game, because participants other than the leader will be disappointed and the leader will be only confirmed in what he or she already knew. You have to select a suitable topic. A suitable topic being a topic that is within the authority of the principal to act. If you're saying, here's a particular, say, military terms division, and now we're going to play World War III or four or five, that is not useful because the authority of that particular officer doesn't have the full scope in which people want to act. So it doesn't work. The authority of the principal should cover the entire, say, area of the war game. Finally, a clear focus. When we would have a war game against Fonterra, which we never do because we're appreciated joint venture partners, but when we would have one, we would say we want a war game against Fonterra in infant nutrition in Malaysia. That's a very focused one. And then you really battle for the shelf in Malaysia, and yes, that battle has taken place and it didn't work out well for Fonterra, but that's a separate topic. Now you need good timing. If you have marketing as a discipline, most marketeers have a shelf life of 18 months and then they move on to the next shelf. In other words, if you do a war game more than a year ahead of the real battle going to take place, most marketing people that have attended the war game, contributed, and bought the conclusions have moved on to the next jobs. If you do it too short before the actual battle on the shelf, you may not have enough time for preparation. So you need to have a proper timing. You need to have a good team of participants. Now, how cliche can it get? Yet it's true. Good team meaning people open. If there's people which are commonly referred to as say, stubborn and know-it-alls, those people may not have the right open mindset. And you, when you have them in your group as facilitators, you must pay attention that they are being heard, otherwise you'll have resistance afterward, because the war game facilitator didn't listen, and this is all new stuff, and we tried this in 1987, etc. Or you have to sometimes push them back, because otherwise there's only two or three big mouths, and the rest shuts up, because they think, well, this is a run race. So there has to be a good dynamic, and even the principal may have to be involved to correct if the dynamic gets out of hand. A good organizational culture. If supply chain and sales are constantly at loggerheads, and you don't know it as a facilitator, you'll find it out soon in the war game, because the one will complain about the other and vice versa. There are, in a good war game setting, no enemies within the room. The enemy is outside. If you want your partisan battles within a company, fight them outside the war game. That's not the place. The war game is a set for learning, for team building, for building better plans, but not for these sort of battles. So that shouldn't be there. Everybody's opinion, antitrust compliance, all obvious, and good preparation. I've already stressed the importance of a good intel brief. There are reasons why, even when you've done a war game reasonably well, and you've fought, it was open, there was good interaction between people, and yet it didn't deliver. One reason could be there's ambiguity in reporting. And then ultimately, the more senior the manager gets, the more politician, they want to have all their options open, and you end up with a leader that makes the choices they had favored in advance, and yet they have given the feel that everybody's opinion contributed. So don't, if you have a chance as facilitator, keep that, say, dynamic of ambiguity out of your after-action report. We make after-action reports just as you do, and there's always this influence factor. And it has to be out, because if there's ambiguity, there's unclarity about choices that the business is going to make, and with unclear choices, ultimately you don't have the focus in battle that you need. You have to ensure in advance that a war game, being a one-off event, connects to the regular business planning cycle. Because if it doesn't, it doesn't have status. Because I've seen more than one finance director after a war game saying, well, this is all very well that you want this budget, but we haven't accounted for it in the budget that we closed 3 months ago, so you'll have to wait for the next budget cycle, which is 9 months, and yes, the competitor will have launched its product, but my budget responsibility overrules your beautiful plans. So if you haven't accounted for the budget, sorry, there's nothing I can do about that. So it has to connect, and the principal and the finance director need to be on board that they may have to reallocate resources, which is what strategy is all about. Finally, thank you, it's about communication, also after the war game. Because people have got expectations that something's going to be happening, because that's what you all played for, that's what you prepared for. And that communication to participants and other stakeholders needs to be flawless. A few more elements. Things go off the rails in business war games probably just as much as in other war games. And a poor representation of reality or a lack of imagination can be a key factor. Another factor being hidden political agendas or objectives, which I mentioned, and the mismatch, which I mentioned before, between the authority of the principal, which is too small in compared to the scope of the war game, leading usually to frustration and disappointment because we have discovered that we have to do this big deal, but nobody in the room, not even the principal, has the authority, so nothing happens. This is a brief idea on how we do wargaming, and I hope it gives you some inspiration for the wargames you do yourself. Thank you for your attention.